If you ask the best in the world the single greatest secret to success, they'll smile and give a gentle laugh. You're asking the wrong question. Being extraordinary is not a single element. It cannot be distilled down to one thing. We're told that being a success is a magical thing that happens in a place you'll arrive. The hard part is that this long-held truth is the biggest lie. Extraordinary features humans that have reached the top of their field and become extraordinary humans. The door to being extraordinary is now open. Will you walk in? Hey, Life Creation Nation, Jeremy here. I am really excited for our guest today. His name is Walter O'Brien, a.k.a. The Scorpion, and you've heard him on shows like Tim Ferriss. He also has a TV show. Walter, welcome to the Create Your Own Life podcast.
Thank you for having me. Nice to be here.
So I know I kind of gave the brief introduction of who you are, Walter, but could you just give the audience a little bit of an idea of, you know, what you do in your company?
Sure. Well, we're problem solvers. We're fixers. So for 20 years, because I had a technical background and I was a hacker, we solved all technical problems for companies big and small. And what we realized is the process and methodology for breaking down those kind of problems applies to life, not just to systems. So now we could plan your wedding and your divorce, as well as we could plan your book or help your daughter with a medical problem, or help you make a documentary for your favorite charity. So we kind of opened the think tank up to the public and said, bring us your wishes and we'll try and make them come true for absolutely anything, any funded problem. So that's what we do now. And we also have a TV show called Scorpion with the main character, Walter O'Brien. It's kind of retelling the story of how our company grew.
Awesome. Well, let's kind of take it way back a little bit. You tested a 197 IQ. What was it like growing up, being smarter than everyone around you?
Well, at that time, all I knew is I was different and weird and had thoughts other people didn't have, and I got to places quicker. Well, a psychologist for gifted children wrote a book once talking about the tortoise and the leopard were friends growing up. But over time, the leopard couldn't understand how he could get everywhere quickly and then had to wait for the tortoise to catch up. And so there was a certain amount of frustration as a kid with both the teachers, the homework, the assignments, and working on things with other people, where I couldn't understand why it took everyone else so long to catch up with where I was already at. Also, the higher the IQ, often the lower the lower the EQ, the emotional intelligence, common sense, social skills. And that's been kind of a key to my business and success, is understanding that people with high IQ have low EQ and trying to compensate for it and understanding how important that is if you want to speak human and interact with the regular world and actually provide customer service.
I love that. Speak human. How are you able to go out and develop EQ? Because I know, like, it's not always something that's readily able to be developed, and especially when, like you said, you're on a higher intelligence level, and sometimes it's just that number seems to go down. How were you able to kind of combat that for yourself?
Well, we cheated. Firstly, we went out, we hired people who were single moms, elementary school teachers, psychologists, typically with PMP certifications, so they were project management professionals, and used them as the account managers and project managers so that the high IQ people could just do what they're best at, which is thinking, and the high EQ people could do what they're best at, which was the communicating with the customer. And we call the high EQ people super nannies, because they're babysitting the geniuses and the customers. And so we started by simply buying EQ and fronting the IQ with EQ. Now, some of us have learned to adapt and adjust our EQ level. But for myself, for example, it's more of a simulation, almost like an actor who's learning consciously how to do these things rather than something that ever comes naturally. So an example that came up about a week or two ago as I was meeting someone for a business meeting. And they texted me saying they're going to be running an hour late. They'll be at 8 o'clock instead of 7 because their sister just had twins. So the IQ in me responded with, great, see you at 8. Whereas the EQ in me then had to rewrite the text and go, oh, my God, that's amazing. Don't worry about being late. Is it a boy or a girl? Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Whereas my IQ is going, what do I care? I'm never going to meet these twins.
That's so funny. It's funny, though, Walter, because I found myself struggling with that a lot, as I've kind of been somebody that I've kind of, I guess, disconnected on the emotional part a little bit more and just kind of dealt more in data. And that kind of seems like something that you've done in your business career.
Well, just to dig into this for a second, basically, people are generally left brain oriented or right brain oriented, mm-hmm. or dominant. And I think for most people, it's like 60-40 one way or the other, depending on their environment growing up and their parents and everything else. And this world tends to reward people who are left brain dominant. Your left brain is your logic, mathematical, scientific side. Your right brain is more your creative, artistic, musical side. And, you know, I've been left brain dominant my whole life to the extreme, and I've been extremely rewarded for it. Whereas if I was right brain dominant, you pretty much end up being a rock star or homeless. There's not a lot in between. Whereas if you're left brain dominant, you can be a doctor, a lawyer, a dentist, whatever, something where you have a career where you follow the rules. As opposed to the starving artist syndrome. So, it is hard to remember the EQ side when it's important, but you rarely get rewarded for it properly in a tangible sense.
Totally. Well, how did you end up from, I guess, this place to, you know, your current focus, which is Concierge Up? How did you even develop that type of business model? Because it seems like it's super specialized to what you do. How do you end up there?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we were heads down for 20 years not thinking of the other business model, and just breaking down problems. But at some point, I was sitting on a rock and meditating and had the epiphany that what an engineer is really classically trained to do is turn ambiguity into absolute. If you hired us tomorrow to build some system for your business, the trick is, how do I get your requirements out of your head for what you want? How do I spec those out for a developer who knows what the heck we're developing and testing, and then deliver back to you what you were imagining in your head?
Mm.
And do that in a method where I'm flexible, I'm avoiding risk, I'm accurate, et cetera, et cetera. And that whole methodology has been worked on since the 60s on what they call an SDLC, a software development lifecycle.
Mm-hmm.
And what I realized is our SDLC had gotten so good at that cycle of solving problems that it doesn't just apply to computers anymore. It really applies to everything. If you came to me with a new invention, I'd be like, okay, well, let's see if it's a new invention. Is someone else doing it? What's the price point? How should we sell it? Is it trademarked? Is it copyrighted? Is it patented? Is it tested? How do we roll it out? How do we mass manufacture it? All these kind of critical thinking skills that begin to lay out your business plan and your pro forma and your website and your logos and your designs. So we're kind of holding your hand as we create your business for you. And we actually call that service business in a box.
Interesting.
Because we've done it so many times. There's 150 little things you got to do when you start a new business. We know what they are, and we know the cheapest place to go get them. If you start your own business tomorrow, you got to start from scratch. It'll take you 3 years to figure this out, and you'll probably get ripped off a few more times in the process.
Interesting. It just seems like as a technologist, you've kind of found, I guess, more exact processes to get things, because I think a lot of times people tend to get in the way of what we're trying to achieve, right? And basically your skills in computer technology have kind of circumvented that a little bit, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, it's also a little bit like being a personal trainer at the gym. You know, if we started doing this next week, I'm going to have all my homework done for our Tuesday status call. So now you are motivated to get all your homework done by then. So it kind of pushes you along to make your own dream come true, because you'll be held accountable by us, because we're doing half the work for you.
Mm.
And by doing that, it means your dream happens in the next year instead of doesn't happen in the next 3 years.
Interesting. And the big thing that you guys work on is any funded need. It's funny because I hear that, and there's such a broad spectrum of things that could, you know, fall under that. You know, how broad is that spectrum for you guys?
Basically, if it's not illegal, then everything else,
right,
is how broad it is. And yeah, we took a business that's been running 30 years, and we dumbed it down to three words. And unfortunately, nobody understands the meaning of one of those words, which is any. When I say any funded need, and what I mean is any idea, any area, any problem, any wish that you have that you want to do, and you have funding for it, you have at least 10 grand to put towards it. And we don't know if it costs more than that or less than that, but at least that shows us you're serious and we can start opening an account and discussing it. And then really dig into what it would take to make that problem go away or make that wish happen, and think alternative methods of doing it and brainstorm with you. And the problem we have is people come back to us 3 years later with some problem they've been struggling with, and they're like, oh, I didn't know you did this. I'm like, I said Annie.
Oh my gosh.
So examples, someone splitting from their business partner after 10 years together, and they want to split the business into two businesses, all the way down to the fax machine. So they need to handle that divorce. Someone writes a book, and they want to get it on the New York Times bestseller list and handle all the details. How do I get it on Kindle? How do I put it in multiple languages? How do I do my book tour where I'm signing in different cities all over the U.S.? How do I get on talk shows? How do I get my PR and publicity? Everything becomes a project. Someone's daughter has anorexia. They want to know if we can find all foods that are odorless and tasteless, but high in calories and fat. Someone else has 7 years of data on racehorses and wants to know if we can find out what the winners have in common by looking at their DNA and other factors, like their diet. Someone else got ripped off in jewelry, where they had a bunch of diamonds that got swapped out for them that were not the diamonds were not real or not the same grade. Can they get their money back? And what's the quickest way to do that? And just literally anything. And just, we will probably have done something similar to it before. We'll mobilize a plan. You approve the hours and we do it. So we become like your super butler, where hopefully every 3 or 4 days you call us with something new. You know, you want to repave your driveway, but you don't have time to figure it out and look at the vendors and make sure it won't melt in the summer and make sure there's no EPA or licensing, planning permission stuff you need from the city, and make sure the guys are doing it are insured and licensed so you don't get sued. And just everything becomes a project, and we're all too busy to do it.
Interesting. The point to that makes me think is, how do you even come up with an idea like that? Because it's a brilliant idea, but how does something like that, you're just like, you know, I think I'm going to supply any need people want. How does that happen?
Well, I looked at my own life and my own kind of to-do list, and I pictured it like a triangle. Imagine a triangle that's got three layers to it, three different colors. And at the top, the peak of the triangle, is your core competency. There's something you're better at than I'll ever be. You know, I'm not going to be the guy who can host a podcast like you're doing. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have the EQ for it. Then at the bottom of your pyramid or your to-do list is a whole bunch of well-defined tasks that you can outsource to your secretary or your assistant or to someone overseas. But the middle of your pyramid, we'll call it the blue part, is ideas and concepts and things you read about in a magazine that you jotted down, things you wish you could look into. You don't know what they cost. You don't know if it's a good or a bad idea. You don't know if it's even possible. And you don't have time to look into it. It's been on your to-do list for the last 2 years, and you still haven't gotten around to it. So you're never going to get around to it, because you never have 8 hours free on Monday to start Googling it and calling vendors and talking to them and checking with your lawyer and seeing if you can do it. And all we're saying is outsource sideways. Take that stuff and assume that we're at least as smart as you, with just as good a Googling skills, with just as good a lawyers, et cetera, and tell us to look into it and report back to you with the pros and cons of a summary on Friday. So you can make an executive decision to say, go ahead and spend 20 more hours on this next week, or forget it. That's crazy. That's cost too much.
Mm. And how big of a staff do you need to be able to operate something like that?
Most of our staff are consultants that we have in a consortium and a network, and we bring them in as needed because they all have completely different expertise, depending on what you want. You know, we had someone this morning who needed a 3D modeling expert who builds like those characters for video games that they wanted to apply to a business model. Yesterday, we needed someone who was an expert in virtual reality, so we had that guy on the phone. And these experts, you know, they can be expensive. So instead of hiring them, you just use them for the 3 or 4 hours you need them for. And so we have a massive Rolodex of known entities and experts who've been working with us for years who are the best in the world at their one area.
Mm.
And we pull them in as needed on your project. And just so I can explain the $10,000 deposit thing.
Sure.
It's just a deposit like you would give to a law firm. Because you don't know what your problem costs, so we don't know what your problem costs. So why start off lying to each other by trying to do a fixed bid? Instead, we start working with you approving where we spend the hours. And then if you give up or you solve the problem early, we will give you back any money that's left over, any hours you haven't used.
Mm.
You're not even really spending the 10 grand at the beginning. You're just simply putting it down as a deposit.
Well, and that's the interesting thing about it is, you know, the customer doesn't know and you don't really know until you get into it. And to that extent, what's the most interesting, I guess, issue that you had to solve for somebody?
Oh, we've had all kinds of ones. Some of the ones that were fun were a billionaire calls us and said his son fell in love with a Ukrainian gold digger. can we break him up before the wedding, but don't let him know we interfered? That's one. We've had a lot of kind of lawsuits where they want us to be an expert witness and get into the details and prove to the judge that someone did or didn't copy intellectual property from each other. In the last case, after me being on the stand for about 5 minutes, the judge leaned over and said, clearly you're the only one here who knows what we're talking about. What do you think I should do? which allowed me to lay out exactly what my client wanted. And the folks in the company average about $150 an hour.
Wow.
Some are more than that, some are less. But if you have a whole crew, you average that. And, you know, that's a very competitive rate for most people. That's what your web guy would cost you normally.
Sure. And I know you've talked about the gold digger before, but I find it to be like one of the most interesting stories I've heard. Could you kind of briefly just explain it for the audience that may not have heard it before?
Sure. So as I said, yeah, billionaire was worried his son fell in love with a Ukrainian gold digger and wanted us to break them up. So we profiled the son, figured out what car he drove, suits he wore, places he partied. And we got another billionaire's son who was a client of ours to act as an agent or a spy. He rented a mansion down the road and ended up quickly hanging out in the same places, driving the same cars, and they became friends. Then we profiled the Ukrainian girl, and she likes to go to the same Starbucks every morning after her gym workout. So we had a Ukrainian model, who was another agent on our side, stand in front of her in her Louis Vuittons and designer jeans. The first day she was at the coffee shop, talking loudly in her native tongue on her cell phone. Then the next day, she stood behind her in line doing the same thing, but they never talked. So the third day, we forced things a bit by filling the entire Starbucks with extras and actors and leaving one seat open opposite our girl. So she sat there and they started talking, and our girl shared gold digging stories about naive Americans. And eventually the other girl opened up and said, yeah, she has this billionaire son on the hook. She's going to marry him, file for her green card, get a settlement, and then use the money to bring her real boyfriend over from the Ukraine. So our girl was wearing a wire, but that recording wouldn't be admissible in court. It wasn't for the son, because then he'd know we interfered. It wasn't for the father, because he already knew this. It was for me, so I knew we were doing the greater good, and I knew they weren't really in love.
Mm.
So now, as they say in The Office here, this lady has fallen on the wrong side of my fairness algorithm. We then get an acting coach to set up a speech of all the wrong things that a father could say to his son, and teaches the father how to deliver that speech. And we text him on a Thursday night. He delivers it to the son. The son is livid, grabs a bag, storms out of the house, goes down the street to his new friends, and vents to his friend about how unreasonable his father is. And the friend said, "That's terrible. You should get revenge on him somehow. You're welcome to stay here, but he's leaving in a jet in the morning to the Dominican Republic for his friend's wedding."
Mm.
It took a moment, but the son then decided, "Aha, I'll go with you. I'll bring my girlfriend. We'll get married with no prenup after your friend gets married." And that's what they did. They all went the next day. First wedding happened, and then the second wedding happened with the same priest.
Wow.
They went on the honeymoon. She had filed for her green card. She got it in processing. And then a while later, when she was back, she files for divorce, asking for a ridiculous settlement. And then we welcome her to our law office downtown to give her her papers. It was the first meeting she was on time for. And I give her a contract. She flicks through it and goes, "This is an acting contract." I said, "I know. Do you recognize the signature?" She looks at the back page and turns white and realizes that's the priest who married them. The first wedding was fake. The priest was fake. The audience was fake. And the second wedding was fake.
Wow.
The second letter she got was from Homeland Security for banning her from the U.S. for 10 years for immigration fraud, since she used a fake wedding license.
Wow.
And then her Uber was waiting outside with her bags to take her to the airport on a one-way trip back to Ukraine. And we had a Dear John letter already written in her handwriting back to the son, saying she never wanted to talk to him again. She didn't want anything from him. So she went back to Ukraine. He got the letter. He was relieved that he's out of trouble with his father. And his father and him are rebonding because he never interfered.
That's awesome. That's awesome. The one thing that you mentioned in there that I find interesting is you mentioned, and this may have just been your way of referring to it, you mentioned a fairness algorithm. Is that something you actually have to weigh the pros and cons, or is it just your way of thinking about it?
No, we actually have it. We actually quantified fairness. So let's say you're working for me in my company, and you're working with two other people. And at the end of the project, you feel like the other people didn't pull their weight. So you come to me, and we have our own internal court system, kind of like Judge Judy.
Mm-hmm.
You say, "You know, I have an argument here as to why it isn't fair that I only get paid a third." So we would look at the work you've done, and if it's technical, the lines of code you logged, and the amount of bugs you had, etc. And we come back and go, "You're right. You did half the work. So I've been minus 16% unfair to you and plus 8% overfair to the other people. So those will be your raises and demerits for the same 1,000 hours on the next project. Therefore, I'm load balancing your fairness points to zero over time." Because otherwise what happens is smart people keep a tally of how many times they've been unfairly treated or unappreciated. And eventually they hit some threshold that they haven't told anyone about and walk into your office and quit on you.
Mm.
And you have no idea they were quitting. So by talking about fairness openly and trying to balance it as close to zero as we can, those people don't magically or suddenly quit without warning.
That's really interesting, because it seems like such a logical way of dealing with it. Do you find yourself, I guess, quantifying a lot of things in your business and your life to be able to handle them more sanely?
Absolutely, all the way down to love and relationships, because I'm almost entirely left brain dominant, I see the world as math. So unless I FICO score or try to quantify stuff, I can't make a decision. So even if we're out to dinner and I'm choosing dessert, I'm going through the menu going, "Well, this one's really bad for me, but this one here is great. It's my favorite, but I've had it 2 days ago." So I'm just, and I know other people think like that, but I am much more mathematical about it.
It's interesting.
To know I'm making the optimal decision at any one point.
And do you have some sort of formula like that for the ethics of any of these problems that come up to you, or is that more or less you just have a decided list of things you won't handle?
No, that's a great question. Generally, I assess things as either good for the planet or not good for the planet as a whole. If it's good for the planet or neutral, we'll take it, because even the profits from neutral stuff we can put into nonprofits and charities that we think are smart. But if it's negative for the planet, if it's just bad for people and bad for human evolution, then we just shy away from it and don't do it. And so I do the first assessment. But if it's on the fence, if it's kind of a gray area, I have a group called Extelligence. It's the opposite of intelligence. It's learning to think with other people's brains.
Interesting.
And it's about 15 guys who are at the top of their industry in all of their own areas. And I meet with them once a month. And our rules are everything at the table is confidential. One person speaks at a time. And you're kicked out if you're caught being politically correct. So it's kind of like verbal fight club. You could bring up a topic like Obamacare or Trump or whatever and have everyone just go at it for an hour arguing. And so anything that's gray area, I'll turn over to that group and go, what do you guys think? Is this for the greater good or not for the greater good? And I'll go with whatever the majority opinion is on that.
Interesting. And how did you select the guys for this group?
Well, there are people I had come across over time through my business that generally, if someone is ambitious and extreme and the best at what they do, the best lawyer, doctor, surgeon, actor, athlete, etc., being the best at what they do to an Olympic level means we become friends. We appreciate each other's discipline and extremism. And that was it. I'd simply come across enough of these people where I said, why don't we all just do dinner once a month? And it became kind of like a male therapy group for me. Because where the hell am I going to take my problems?
Right.
And also for them. You know, if you get someone dealing with divorce or fighting over custody of their kids or losing their parents to cancer, it's nice to have a group like that where nobody there has any agenda other than to try and help each other. There's no money or membership involved. Everyone just pays for their own dinner and that's it. So it became a great thing. And we've been doing it 6 or 7 years now.
That's interesting. So you've kind of developed this group that you really trust on a different level. That's awesome, because I think, I guess it's a great example of a mastermind, you know, in that way.
Yeah. I mean, Extelligence is a version of mastermind. It's just a little more extreme.
Right. Well, the thing I'm also interested in is, how did the TV show come about for you, Walter?
Sure. Well, when we switched the business from only solving technical problems to now solving every kind of problem, we've gotten up to 2,800 requests in a month.
Wow.
In fact, the people listening to this show, I'd recommend, if you haven't done it already, start getting in early, because we can get a bit backlogged in trying to respond. So type your three wishes in now. And literally, you just go to concierge.com and type in just a one-liner for what you want and hit submit. And there's no obligation. It just means we'll start talking to you then about what is the idea and how do you want to approach it? So it opens up a discussion. But what happened was, when we get that many requests, I now started running out of geniuses. I had too many problems, not enough geniuses. So I went to my geniuses and I said, now I have a funded problem. How do I find more geniuses? They're 1 in 10,000 each, so they're kind of hard to find.
Mm. Well, before you get into that real quick, Walter, I just had a thought pop up with you mentioned typing in your wishes. Is that like a spam issue for you guys, where you have like a lot of random stuff coming in, or do you have a way of actually keeping, I guess, quality control on that when the stuff comes in?
We have certain screening and quality control. And yeah, of course, some people will make jokes or do spam or whatever. And we try to have people be honest about if they're funded or unfunded. You know, we've had, and this is not to encourage this, but we've had kids write in who are very smart, who attach their IQ test, but their parents didn't have enough money to get them a laptop or get them on the internet. So we sent them a laptop with internet access for Christmas, because no smart kid should be off the internet at this in this day and age.
That's awesome.
So stuff like that. So sometimes we'll randomly pick unfunded requests that we think we can easily help someone out by spending an hour or two on it. But and then maybe one day that'll turn into a smart charity fund, where we're given a certain chunk of nonprofit funding, and we just look at all the unfunded requests and see which wishes we're going to grant. But generally, we focus on the funded ones, because it means those people are serious, they're willing to put their money where their mouth is and not waste our time and really get engaged on making something happen and make a difference. you know, if they've been talking about doing their business or their startup or their gadget or their book for the last 3 or 4 years, this is the time to actually force yourself to make that happen. And for us to be your personal trainer and hold your hand and drag you through it to make sure it happens and you actually do it instead of talking about it.
Totally. Well, sorry I cut you off on that. It was just a random thought that came up as you were describing it. Anyway, the geniuses.
Yeah, no problem. So I asked the geniuses, how do I find more geniuses? And they analyzed the problem like they always do. And they said, well, it seems like if you write a book, the millennials probably won't read it. If you make a movie, they'll forget your name in 6 months. But if you replace CSI as the number one show on the air for the next 10 years, the geniuses will come find you. And the 12-year-olds will grow up wanting to be engineers and scientists rather than wanting to be Kim Kardashian. And I'm like, well, if there's one thing I can do for this country, for our future, that might be it.
A lot less Kardashians, thank God.
We got the producers of Transformers, Spider-Man, and Star Trek, the director of Fast and the Furious, the writers of Sopranos, Prison Break, and Hostages, put them all together, got them $100 million, and we're now in season 3 of the number one show on the air, here and in 188 countries, right, or number one or two in most of those countries. And the show is a dysfunctional family of superheroes where you got a bunch of geniuses that don't speak human very well, kind of like the A-Team and MacGyver meets Big Bang Theory. And then you have Catherine McPhee, who comes on board as a single mom with high EQ, who ends up being the first super nanny, who starts teaching them how to communicate and be effective in terms of customer service. And, you know, it's hilarious. And these people have OCD, and they're germophobic, and they're perfectionists, and they're agoraphobic, and everything else. And people can generally relate to one or more of the characters as being a little bit like themselves.
Interesting. And what has that done for, I guess, drawing more geniuses to your company then?
So when the show aired, we got 26 million people watched the pilot, 105,000 of them Google and hit our website every time it airs. And then out of that, we whittle it down to about 10 to 20 geniuses per week send in their resumes. Whereas we would normally find one genius every 3 months, we're now getting up to 20 per week. So that was one thing that helped. Also, then people who actually read the website end up submitting their wishes to us, which is great. And we're able to help those people. We've connected a lot of people with the right doctors to help them medically. We've turned businesses around. We've modernized businesses that would have otherwise gone bankrupt. And we've allowed people to bring their gadgets and their dreams to fruition, where they actually now have a full company building it and selling what they're doing online.
That's amazing. Have you guys ever actually helped somebody bring like a large invention to light?
Yeah, no, we do it all the time. Unfortunately, unless the customer gives us permission, we can't say.
I understand
which invention it is, but. You know, large e-commerce sites that we'd all be familiar with that are selling clothing or selling electronics. You know, that's something we build a lot for people where they want to be the Amazon.com of a particular area. Lots of big famous companies we'd know where we've helped them either rebrand or split in half or change what they do and modernize their business.
Awesome.
Make it more efficient.
Well, I know we're running a little low on time, Walter, and I want to respect your time. So I just want to ask a couple questions about you as the entrepreneur. What's been your biggest skill set and how have you developed that?
My biggest skill set would be logic in terms of just this problem-solving ability where my brain remembers any cool solution, formula, or widget it's seen in the last 30 years. So my brain is like a dusty attic of problem-solving stuff. So when someone brings up a problem to me, I immediately assemble all the Lego pieces to say, using these things would be the right way to solve that problem. So I think that's kind of the heart of the business. Now, that's something I guess I was born with to some extent because I had a very strong logical brain.
Mm-hmm.
The part I've worked on the most is EQ, trying to understand humans, trying to understand as they build a business, who's a good fit, who isn't, who's lying to us, who isn't, who is, you know, is the customer really telling us what they're really thinking and feeling, and trying to stay away from the bad people and steer towards the good people, the reasonable people. You know, I'll never run away from a difficult problem, but I'll often run away from a difficult person because life's just too short.
Has there been somebody that's kind of been like a mentor for you, I guess, maybe early on in your business journey?
Very early on, I did have a mentor back in Ireland. He was an engineer who kind of was the expert of the telecom system for the country. And he took me under his wing and helped me understand computers and technology a little bit better. He was a prodigy himself. That helped me a lot early on. But I'd say in recent years, it's been the mixture of that consortium of people inside the company as well as Extelligence that's kind of been my sounding board and my guidance. You know, in everyday life, if someone tells me I'm wrong, in my head I go, there's a very small chance that I'm wrong and that this person's right. But in curated environments like Extelligence, if one person tells me I'm wrong, I think there's a 50% chance I'm wrong. If two or three of them tell me I'm wrong, I better change. So it stops me going off the rails or going too far in the wrong direction.
I feel like every time you mention Extelligence, I can't help but think of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
But it does very much look like that, yes.
Well, what does the next 12 months look like for you and your business, Walter?
Well, we're in season 3 of the TV show. Hopefully we start developing season 4 if the ratings stay as high as they are. We just won the Most Innovative Company Award, the LA Business Journal Award last Thursday. And we'd won the Most Innovative Product Award previously. So hopefully that'll encourage more people to come to us with their innovations and, you know, use our help if we're the best inventors. I think we'll have a lot more cyber activity going on in our government contracting. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there with our new leadership, whether he abolishes some of the regulation right now that slows down procurement, because it takes up to 6 years for the government to buy something from us. And in technology, by the time they bought it, it's out of date. And that's a huge risk to the nation from a cyber point of view. Mm. Getting some common sense around that would be a good idea. If we don't end up in World War III because of our civil war, because of the coming of the robots. You know, you've got one of the largest employers is Uber with 144,000 drivers. Well, Uber's now offering self-driving cars in Pittsburgh that are Volvos, that Volvo has partnered with Uber, and Volvo is owned by the Chinese. And that's the beginning of the end for all those drivers. And that's not the next 50 years. That's the next 5 years as that rolls out quickly. Because 5 years ago, nobody knew what an Uber was.
It's almost like Skynet or something like that.
Well, there's a certain aspect of that, too, that you can get to. But it would start with Uber. Then the next thing, if you can self-drive cars, you can self-drive trucks. So there goes all the truck drivers. Then if those cars are centrally maintained, like our MTA buses, and they're electric, and they have no drivers, no contractors, and no accidents, you can Uber everywhere for about $2 a time or $2,000 a year, which means that you don't need to buy a car. So you don't need dealerships, gas stations, tire centers, brake centers, O'Reilly's, Pep Boys. You also don't need valets or parking lots. And half of our commercial real estate is parking lots. So now what do you do when commercial real estate values get cut in half because the real estate's twice as available? So all of that will happen in the near future, and I think it'll create turbulent times.
Walter, we're about to come in for a landing, but before we do, are you ready for some rapid-fire questions?
Do my best.
You are selected to give a commencement speech. What topic do you cover and why?
EQ, because it's 85% of your success.
It's a big, big deal, and that's, I think, why some people are so successful at sales and stuff like that when you look at them versus other people, right?
Absolutely, and if you walk into any Fortune 1000 company, the CEO in charge is not the guy with the highest IQ. He's generally the guy with the highest EQ.
Absolutely. What about one quote that's had a big effect in your life?
Be careful who you listen to. I think most people are wrong most of the time, and you've got to consider the source when you take advice from anybody. You've got to check their track record.
Totally. Has there been a book that's had a big effect in your life?
Oh, a whole bunch of them. I mean, the 48 Laws of Power is a must. Anything by Malcolm Gladwell I found interesting. I liked Fooled by Randomness and Black Swan because it helps you to not get carried away with your own success and not believe you're right all the time. And Fooled by Randomness is probably a great book for anyone to read.
I've got to agree with you on the Malcolm Gladwell reference there. I read Outliers, and then I kind of binge-read everything else that he has. It's so intriguing, the depth he goes to.
Yeah, and Outliers was pretty much a book written for me. So definitely a good one.
What entrepreneur do you admire most, and why?
Probably Bill Gates, because philosophically he was selfish for the first 50 years of his life. So he could be effectively unselfish. He then wrote a single check that wiped out malaria for $7 million and set up the biggest charity in history. Whereas, you know, just to show an extreme contrast, Mother Teresa was selfless her whole life. But if you actually added up the body count of how many lives she saved or how many people she helped, it's not as effective as what Bill Gates had done. So I think people should be selfish for the first half of their life, so they can be effectively unselfish for the second half.
And I think it's the same thing when they tell you if an airplane's going down, it's to put the oxygen mask on yourself because you're not good to anybody else if you're not breathing.
Exactly, yep.
Well, people have very different definitions of success, Walter, but if you got to define it for yourself and give it your own personal meaning, what does it mean?
At the top of Maslow's hierarchy of needs is a thing called self-actualization. And most people don't get a chance to think about it because they're too busy scrambling to pay the rent on Friday. But if you do figure out your self-actualization, which is what's your purpose on the planet, why are you here, what were you supposed to do, and you figure out that purpose, and then you figure out a plan and execute how to get there, not only do you reach success, because success is using the gifts and skills you have to do the most good for society before you die, but it also means that you are living a purpose-filled life, which was Napoleon Hill's definition of happiness.
Mm.
So if you figure out your purpose and you're fulfilling it and you're doing good for society, that's success from all angles and happiness.
Awesome. Well, Walter, if our listeners are ready to go get any funded need handled, where's the best place to check that out, man?
ConciergeUp.com. Which will take you to Scorpion Computer Services, and you just fill in the form and hit submit. It couldn't be simpler. ScorpionComputerServices.com if you want to see more about us, or just click press and see all the stuff that we do and poke around there. But the important thing is that you really stop for a moment after this podcast for your own sake and just sit there and go, if you have three wishes, what would they be? And why not type them in and talk to us about them if you believe you can put some funding behind them and have us make them happen, because you're not going to make them happen on your own without a little nudge.
It's like a digital genie. It's like the coolest freaking thing.
Awesome. Digital genie. That's another good answer.
Yes, sir. Well, Walter O'Brien, thank you so much for being on the Create Your Own Life podcast today.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.